And we welcome you into another edition of Saturday Tailgate Week 4 each and every Saturday here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Cale, Marquise Munson leading you right up until kickoff for the next 2 hours. Hollywood, the voice is back. The pipes are feeling good. Tone Loke has been kicked to the curb.
I mean, you want me to sing? I could prove it. I could prove that I'm back. Nah, my voice is back. I'm feeling good. College football this week. A lot of big games this week, especially in the SEC. I'm looking forward to it, man. A lot of 11 o'clock games, so that means we got to get out of here as soon as this is over with so we can catch some of these 11 a.m. games.
I will be driving 75 miles per hour straight home right after this show. Back on the couch by 11:15. Tito's poured by 11:16. And then let's get crazy. College football, baby. 102.5 The Game today's got Michigan, Wisconsin. You'll hear that play-by-play at 11 o'clock, followed by Auburn and Texas A&M, which will lead you into Predators preseason hockey against the Lightning tonight. Also on 94.9 Game 2, you've got Southern Miss and Alabama, and that'll be joined after that game by Kentucky and Mississippi State. Before we get to the Saturday spotlight, let's get to the games from last night because you had two really good ones out west. First of all, number 10 Utah goes to USC, and they get knocked off last night 30-23. The Trojans on a third-string quarterback and the head coach Clay Helton on the hot seat going into this year might have just got a signature win.
Another one bites the dust. Duh. Another Pac-12 team bites the dust. Another Pac-12 team that we think was going to win the conference. I had them winning the conference, and they lose. And this has been the narrative of the Pac-12 every single year, is they lose to teams. And I'm not even going to say they lose to teams that they're not supposed to, because USC's a good team. Obviously, they lost to BYU, which makes that Tennessee loss a little bit easier on Vols fans when you look at BYU beating USC, and then USC goes out the next week and then beats a top 10 team. But that's just the narrative of it, of you lose games. And that, I think that's what separates the Pac-12 from the rest of the conferences, because we know who the top dogs are in the SEC. We know who the top dog is in the ACC, Big 12, and Big 10. We know who those top dog teams are. When you make predictions for the Pac-12, you can pick four teams easily who can win that division and that conference. And I think Utah was one of those teams. And you know, obviously Moss getting hurt in that first half, that hurt him a lot. He had six carries for 20 yards early on in that game before he got hurt with a shoulder injury. And it's a tough loss for him. But you know, kudos to Clay Helton, man. His team is keeping him a job, and I think this is a win that lets USC know that they can give him another season to carry on what he's doing this season. But another Pac-12 team, another loss, it's going to be hard for them to get in this playoffs, man.
USC down JT Daniels, down Slovis, enter Matt Fink. He outplays Tyler Huntley as we've got our first upset of the weekend, and it wasn't even technically the weekend. Also last night, number 20 Boise State holds off Air Force 30-19, and Air Force quarterback Donald Hammond went down with an injury for a stretch. He ended up coming back in the game, but if you were watching that game, Air Force was running the triple option, milking the clock, grounding and pounding away with the fullback up the middle, 4 yards in a cloud of dust. But I tell you what, the kid that really impresses me is the Boise quarterback, who, if you think Marcus Mariota takes a ton of shots, watch Hank Bachmeier, the quarterback for Boise State. That kid literally gets hit every single play, whether it's through the passing game or the run game. He takes a shot every single snap.
Yeah, and kudos to him, because even though he takes these hits, he's efficient. He was 19 for 26 last night. He had a QBR of 83 and threw for over 250 yards in that game and still had two touchdowns and no interceptions. So, you know, kudos to him. And that was a defensive battle early on in that game. In the first quarter, you know, no team scored. And then, you know, at halftime, they went in both tied at 10. And then Boise State kind of got away with that victory. 30-19 was the final score of that. But, but man, that there was one hit in that game that I didn't think he was going to get up from. It was like that Mississippi State quarterback flying in the air, but except he actually, you know, stayed on the ground. But that it was one of those hits. I can't remember who hit him, but man, that was brutal. And you know, but kudos to him for being able to do that, being able to still stay in the pocket and still keep that poise and keep that efficiency inside the pocket. So, you know, kudos to them, and they got the victory 4-0 for Boise State this year.
All right, that is last night. Let's get to today, and Captain Kurt, let's get to the Saturday Spotlight.
It's time.
This is our time
for the Spotlight. Shining a light on the biggest matchups this weekend in college football.
All right, we got a pair of good ones in the SEC today, but we actually start our spotlight, which could be the marquee matchup of the day outside of the conference, and that is in the Big Ten, as 11th-ranked Michigan visits 13th-ranked Wisconsin. Big spot for Jim Harbaugh and the Wolverines, because the last time Michigan played a football game was 2 weeks ago. They needed overtimes against the Army. When you go overtime against the military academy and you've got national championship aspirations, there's some questions that need to be answered. Has Harbaugh figured it out with the bye week as they go into Madison today?
Yeah, see, this is why you need a bye week after. I don't agree with bye weeks early on, especially after two games, but he definitely needed a bye week this week. And this is a game that when we did our predictions for the preview show, I had Michigan winning the conference, but I had them losing this game. And I still believe so. When you look at this Wisconsin team, they're number one in total defense this year. And that's just not, you know, their offense. Jonathan Taylor in these games against Michigan has had big games. He had 132 yards in one game where they won in 2017. And then, you know, he had over 100 yards in another game in that loss, you know, last year when they lost 38-13. So, and when you look at Michigan, they're 1-5 against ranked opponents on the road. And they're 0-6 when they're outright underdogs. And I know you love those stats.
I do. Here's another one for you. Paul Chryst is the head coach of Wisconsin. In conference at home, a 4-point favorite or less, he's only 12-12 against the spread. To your point, though, Wisconsin's defense is now, I know the competition has been a little suspect, Florida,
absolutely.
Central Michigan, but Wisconsin has not been scored on this year.
Yeah, exactly. And when you look at, so you look at a team whose defense is kind of on a hot streak, and I think that you keep momentum on defense, and they've actually played a game last week, so they're kind of keeping their momentum on. And then when you look at the last thing you saw from Michigan's offense, Shea Patterson has not been efficient. He's been struggling this year. Josh Gattis hasn't got into rhythm as an offensive coordinator that a lot of people expected him to be.
Let me stop you right there. With the bye week, with Josh Gattis as the OC, this is a year where Jim Harbaugh has been more hands-off than he's ever been with the offense. Do you think he meddled the last 2 weeks and got involved with the offense, and will we see him get involved today, or does he still say hands-off?
No, he has to get involved. I mean, if you've watched the two performances from offense in their first two games, you have to get involved if you're Jim Harbaugh. And because that's your – and I understand because every coach has its specialty. You know, Jeremy Pruitt's his defense, you know, even though you haven't seen it.
Even those kids can't get aligned.
Yeah, even those kids can't get to the line. You know, Dan Mullins is the quarterbacks and developing quarterbacks. Same thing for Jimbo Fisher. That's the same thing we've seen with Jim Harbaugh. When he's able to get an offense, and I know he had a coaching staff at Stanford that was able to, you know, have success, but when he had hands-on guys like Andrew Luck, when he goes to the NFL level and have guys like Colin Kaepernick, who played, quite frankly, his best career playing under Jim Harbaugh, I think when he has his hands in the offense, I think he's a lot better. And I think he had his hands in offense last year with Shea Patterson, and you saw how good Shea Patterson was early on and then late towards that season. So I think, you know, Josh Gattis, he's a, you know, obviously comes from Penn State. He went to Alabama, and then he did say that he was helping game planning with Mike Locksley at Alabama when it came to the offense. But, you know, you want to see him kind of mix in his two cents with Josh Gattis about what he wants to see from this offense, because what I've seen from this offense is absolutely nothing. And your job's on the line. So if you really want to put your job in Josh Gattis' hands, a first-year offensive coordinator and play caller, then by all means do so, especially against a ranked opponent like Wisconsin.
Moving along in the spotlight, 7th-ranked Notre Dame goes between the hedges tonight to take on number 3 Georgia. And the fact of the matter is, for now almost two decades, when Notre Dame plays elite competition, they flat out get embarrassed. They do not perform well, specifically under Brian Kelly, 0-4 against top 5 competition, 3 of which have been by 14 points or more. How the heck does Notre Dame make this a game tonight in what could very well be a hostile environment?
So I looked at a stat yesterday, and I went back from 2014. So I'm not counting in, you know, neutral site games. I know they played a game against Syracuse at Yankee Stadium in that Shamrock series, but they're 2-7 against road teams that are ranked. Now, there are two games that they actually won. One was Virginia Tech, which obviously that's a tough environment to play with. But in their last game after, before that was 2015 when they beat Temple 24-20. And Temple at the time was ranked 21st in the nation. And so you have two wins on the road, but they didn't even come from top 15 opponents. They came from two opponents that were ranked in the top 25, but 24 and 21. And when you look at him against ranked opponents, 18-18 against ranked opponents in his career, 3-7 against top 10 teams. He had that blowout against Alabama in the BCS championship and then had that blowout last year against Clemson. It's just like it seems like Brian Kelly gets into these situations to where he goes on the road and he can win these games in Notre Dame. That's no doubt. Like, he's proven that. But when he goes on the road, I think it's a difficult task for him, and I don't know why. When it's neutral site, it's kind of thrown up in the air depending on the opponent. Obviously, when you have Clemson and Alabama, the two top-heavy teams in all of college football, obviously it's going to be a difficult task. But he seemed to have problems beating great teams on the road, and you're not going in the easiest environment in the world in Georgia and in Athens, so it doesn't get any better, and you're going in with a quarterback that still has a ton of questions surrounding him, especially after that Louisville game where a lot of speculation and questions surrounding that offense. So I don't think this is going to be a good game for Brian Kelly in this one.
Before we get to Georgia-Notre Dame tonight, it's the 7 o'clock kickoff on CBS. You've got the Texas A&M Aggies hosting the Auburn Tigers. We will get to that game when we come back as we'll kick off our SEC swing. It is Saturday Tailgate. Good to have you in here for week number 4. Nick Hale, Marquise Munson live here, taking you right up until kickoff today at 11 o'clock on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That it is, Saturday Tailgate Week 4 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick and Marquise leading you right up until kickoff today. We will get to all the big games of the day. We've got Bill Bender from the Sporting News is going to join us to kick off hour number 2. But right now, Captain Kurt, let's get to the SEC swing.
Now, let's focus in on the Southeastern Conference.
Take it, all three.
SEC Swing. A quick thought on every SEC matchup this weekend.
All right, Marquise, 8th-ranked Auburn travels to College Station today for an SEC West matchup against the 17th-ranked Aggies of Texas A&M. Interesting in this series, dating back to 2012, the road team with a ton of success. So what do you think today? Kellen Mond, Bo Nix, one quarterback with experience, another one trying to send shockwaves throughout the conference.
I'm always a big component of defense, and I think if you look at the two teams, obviously Auburn has the best defense out of the two. Now, yeah, you have a veteran quarterback in Kellen Mond, but the last time we seen Kellen Mond go against a defense of Auburn's caliber was Clemson, and you saw what happened in that game where he just looked off rhythm and he couldn't get his offense going at all. And even though it's at home, I know this is a tough environment for a freshman quarterback to be in, especially going to Kyle Field. Kyle Field is a tough place to play in. I watched Alabama go in there, and they struggled on offense as well. It's just a tough environment to play in. And, you know, for a freshman, and especially you're still trying to get rhythm with your wide receivers, and I still don't think he has that number one guy, that go-to game changer on his wide receiver core yet. But you see with Whitlow, he's running the football well, so it kind of – takes some pressure off of it. You may be able to see Bo Nix get out the pocket a little bit. Maybe get outside. You know, get a couple rushing yards in this game as well. It's going to be a tough game for him, but I think with Auburn's defense, man, it's just going to be tough to beat him.
You know, it's one thing to go into Dallas, a neutral site game against Oregon, which is a quality opponent, and they were down, I think, 21-6 in that game, and Bo Nix was able to rally the troops in that type of environment, a lot of pressure for a young kid making his first opportunity, and they were able to get that win. But it's a totally different animal when you go in conference on the road, especially at a place like the 12th Man, where that place can be absolutely deafening. There'll be over 90,000-plus people there. But there's something about this kid that I can't really put my finger on. I don't know if it's the family element with his dad, Patrick Nix, from 25 years ago or whatever it is, but the kid just feels like, not only is he a winner, but everybody around him just kind of feeds off of his energy. He's got that infectiousness.
Yeah, you could tell he has that dog in him. And I know D-Mace talks about that a lot on the morning show, of like guys having that dog in him. And, you know, he may not show it in emotion. He may not be yelling on the sideline and, you know, getting that quarterback that gets everybody pumped up. But we call that a quiet assassin. And that's pretty much what he's been in the last couple games. And, you know, and that obviously, a lot of that and a lot of his skill set plays into Gus Malzahn getting his hands back into that offense, and I think that helps him out a lot. And that also proves, you know, how, you know, we make fun of Gus a lot as a coach, but as an offensive-minded coach, I think he's one of the best in the SEC when it comes to that offense. So, and I think he's comfortable, and Gus is comfortable with giving him some of these offensive plays, and he's comfortable executing them. And it's only going to get better. Now, he has this game, and then, you know, a lot of their other games against Georgia, against Alabama, a lot of those games are at home. So those are going to be high-level pressure games as well. But I think if you can go in a game like on the road against, and Kyle Field and that tough environment and be able to handle the poise in that game, I think you'll be able to, later down the road, be able to handle games like Georgia and Alabama. So this is a good test for him. This is a good test for him for the rest of the season and for what Auburn can do on offense for the rest of the season.
Coming up at 11 o'clock today, the Tennessee Volunteers go to the Swamp for a early kickoff against the Gators in Gainesville. And you know what's funny is you look at this game, and Tennessee's about a 2-touchdown underdog, and it feels like a lot of people believe that Tennessee can keep this game within the number and keep it close because of Felipe Franks being out for the year with the injury. But I look at it the other way. I look at Kyle Trask as a guy who I think might actually make this offense operate at a smoother rate and be more efficient, certainly more dynamic in the passing game. I don't know that this is a game where Tennessee is going to be in the game late in the third, fourth quarter. I like Florida to roll today. I think this is a tough spot for Tennessee.
See, I'm on the other side. I think from watching Tennessee play, and obviously it's been some bad losses and it's been some bad games, but we can chalk that BYU team up as they're a pretty good team. BYU beat USC. USC beat Utah last night. So they're a pretty good team. Georgia State, obviously, that was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at this team, they've lost games late. And I think that's been the problem with them. Their defense has allowed teams to come back on them. Georgia State scored 17 points in the fourth quarter. BYU scored 13 points in the fourth quarter. So, and I think that's been the problem. It's not like this Tennessee team has been bad throughout. You know, you can tell, you know, a bad team when they step foot on the field. You know a bad team, but they haven't played bad for four quarters. They played bad in the fourth quarter and in the second half of games. And I think if they take the mindset of, look, we keep this game close for three quarters. We go into this fourth quarter. Yeah, we've struggled. We've gave away a lot of points in the fourth quarter on defense. But, hey, this is a road test. This is a road game. This is a game that can get us back to where we want to be. This is a game that can, you know, if the players do buy into Jeremy Pruitt, this is a game that can, quite frankly, save our coach. We see with Clay Helton in USC, that was a game that pretty much saved their season. This can be another game that saved Jeremy Pruitt's season. So, as long as they go into that fourth quarter with that mindset, I think they can keep this game close. And I think even, you know, if their defense can put some pressure on a young quarterback that's making his first official start in college football, if they put enough pressure on this guy, they can possibly sneak away with this game. And we'll talk more about in depth about that game later. But, you know, I just look at this game as, you know, I've seen Tennessee play good football at times, and I've seen them play some really bad football. As long as they substitute the really bad football part and play some decent football late in the game, I think they can keep this game pretty close.
I really love Dan Mullen as an offensive guy, an offensive mind, a play caller. But here's the thing. If you're Tennessee and you've got nothing to lose, you've already had, you know, a lot of failure this year, you go in there guns a-blazing. You go out there, you're aggressive, you attack, you run all your trick plays, you go for it on fourth and short at midfield instead of playing field position and punting. And Jim Chaney, it's real simple. You're the highest paid offensive coordinator in all of college football. Can you give me something more than run left for 3 yards, run right for 3 yards, play action and punt? Can you give me more than a 5-yard curl route? Can you just show me that you actually have a little bit of depth to your playbook?
Well, I think a lot of that, Nick, is when we see 5-yard curl routes and 3-yard dump passes, usually that's to get a young freshman quarterback or a young guy who's making his first start, like we saw, and I hate to bring NFL in this, but like we saw with Garner Minshew against the Titans, where it was short passes, short dump passes, and then all of a sudden, you know, you saw him throw the ball downfield. And you have a veteran quarterback. It's not like Garantano, this is his first rodeo. So I'm starting to think that Jim Chaney just doesn't trust Garantano as his quarterback to make those throws, to make those plays that are above 10 yards. And that's what I think it is. But you have a veteran quarterback, be able to play within his skill set. I think that's the thing that Oklahoma's doing with Jalen Hurts, is they're playing within his skill set. And I'm not comparing Garantano to Jalen Hurts, but I'm saying, but having a new quarterback and not going, okay, you know, this is our offense. You're going to have to fit to what our offensive scheme is. No, this is your quarterback. Play within his skill set. If you see Garantano can throw the football downfield, and we've seen plays that he can actually do that, then do it. Then show that. Be able to do that with him. Play within his skill set. And I don't think Jim Chaney's doing that. I think Jim Chaney came in with a mindset of, this is what I want our offense to be. And Garantano, that's why you've seen such a decline from his season last year from this year.
All right, coming up today at 11 o'clock over on the West End, LSU invades Vanderbilt to take on the Commodores. Joe Burrow has been downright ridiculous the first 3 weeks of the season. I've got no reason to believe, even with the bye week and Vanderbilt having some extra time to prepare, Derek Mason, Jason Tarver, the DC, I don't see how they slow down this LSU offense. This could be one of those lopsided games, and it might actually be a wider margin than the Georgia-Vanderbilt game was a few weeks ago.
I do think so, because the difference between that, the way Georgia's offense is compared to LSU's offense is, Georgia kind of plays that pro style to where they'll run the football, they'll run the football, they'll run the football, and obviously they got two talented running backs to do so, and then they may throw the ball downfield or may throw some slants and some curls every now and then. But this LSU offense is different. They're foot on the gas, foot on the gas, foot on the gas with Joe Burrow, throwing it to his three best wide receivers on his team, running the football, that spread offense. It's kind of like it's go, 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 go with that LSU offense, and I just don't think Vanderbilt has the players on defense to be able to keep up with that, and that's why LSU just runs away with this easy.
All right, a couple of survival games I will call today. Kentucky and Mississippi State, as well as South Carolina and Missouri. Let's quickly get to the Wildcats and the Bulldogs. One of these games where you look at it and you could see it going either way, but boy, the loser of this game all of a sudden kind of looks at their schedule, looks at their record, and might be in that like 7-5 range. It feels like, oh, I don't want to call it an elimination game, but if they have dreams of getting to 8, 9, 10 wins, Mississippi State, Kentucky, today's the day. You got to get the win.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mississippi State have outscored Kentucky 87-23 in their last two games in Starkville. So, and then obviously Tommy Stevens' health is questionable in this game, so he may not even play today. Even though Hill has been fantastic, he has 431 yards. He leads the SEC in rushing yards this season so far. Even despite all that, I think Kentucky uses that game that they had last week against Florida, knowing they had that game in their grasp. That defense still played pretty well against Florida, and I think Kentucky gets away with this, especially if Stevens is not going to play this game.
South Carolina, Missouri also feels like one of these games. You know, Ryan Helinski last week against Alabama showed some flashes. They go on the road against Missouri. Missouri starting to get some momentum after that opening week loss to Wyoming.
Yeah, since that Wyoming loss, they've actually allowed 265 yards in their last two games. And I know that's, you look at the competition level and it's not up to par with an SEC team. But I think this Missouri offense the defense is picking up, and their offense has been pretty consistent under Kelly Bryant, and then you got Larry Roundtree, who's a good running back, and so I think they have a very balanced offense to where you have Kelly Bryant and a good run game. They got a decent offensive line, and then their defense is picking up the slack. But now I want to see what their defense does against an SEC opponent before I determine how good their defense actually is. But I mean, Helinski, you know, kudos to him and what he played. He played Alabama as good as you can ask for a guy that's making his first big start against an SEC team. And I think he does have the running attack to be able to kind of take the pressure off of him a little bit when it comes to throwing the football. And he does have some talented wide receivers. But I look at this Missouri team, and I think we went into this season thinking that they're the third best team in the East, SEC East. They may end up being the second team in the SEC East when it's all said and done.
Also today, Alabama has Southern Miss. They are about a 40-point favorite. And then also Ole Miss. How about this? They host number 23 Cal. Cal comes in 3-0, and I believe Ole Miss is actually a favorite in this game. But that would be a huge win for Matt Luke.
No, absolutely. That'd be a very huge win for Matt Luke. And don't sleep on this Cal team, man. They can run the football. You know, Christopher Brown, he has a 324 yards. And you have Marcel Dancy, who has 132 yards. And also their quarterback, Chase Gabers, he can get out the pocket too as well. So, you know, that'll be a game that you definitely have to look out for. But I'm still looking forward to seeing what Rich Rod is able to do. I still haven't seen much pizzazz. You know, we went into the season excited about a Rich Rod offense, and I haven't really seen much pizzazz in this offense just yet. And maybe he doesn't have the talent there yet. They're running the football pretty well with Scotty Phillips, and you know, but I'm looking forward to seeing more from that Rich Rod offense. And this will be a big win for Matt Luke, because he's a coach that's not really on the hot seat, but he's a coach that you kind of have your questions about.
All right, coming up next, we will get to the SEC game of the week. Little Notre Dame Georgia discussion when we come back. Can Brian Kelly finally get a big-time signature win against a top-five team in the regular season? We'll get to that after this. It is Saturday Tailgate. Good to have you in Week 4 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We welcome you back in Saturday Tailgate here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nikhil Marquise Munson with you. The Coach's Corner coming up in just about 12 minutes. You'll hear from Brian Kelly, Dan Mullen, Jimbo Fisher, Gus Malzahn, and Nick Saban. That's coming up at just about 9:45. But let's focus in on the game of the week, according to CBS, Georgia-Notre Dame tonight, 7 o'clock central kick in Athens, Georgia. And it's funny, you look at this game and, you know, Notre Dame, we've documented it many times since 2000 against top five teams. They have been downright brutal. Only Vanderbilt, I believe, is worse in the last 20 years. But how does, twofold, one, how does Notre Dame hold up against Georgia's offensive line? Because Georgia's offensive line, probably the best in all of college football. So from a physicality standpoint, how do you hold up against those big boys? And then secondly, what does Ian Book need to do tonight to match Jake Fromm and have himself a game so that when the fourth quarter comes, the Irish aren't looking at a three-score deficit?
See, I don't think there's anything you can do about that offensive line, man. That offensive line is just talented. Because it's weird, because if you send too many rushers towards Jake Fromm and you try to put some pressure on him, then you're leaving somebody open. You're leaving a guy like Swift wide open in a corner somewhere to where he can get a big yardage gain in there. And so I think it's difficult to try to put pressure on Fromm when you have that offensive line. I think the major key for them is not really maybe putting pressure on Fromm, but maybe just stopping the run game. I think if you stop the run game, when you got a guy like DeAndre Swift who's, I mean, he's only got like 30-something carries this season, but he's like top five in rushing yards in the SEC. So I think being able, if you're Notre Dame's defense, to contain not the offensive line, but contain the running game, I think that will help them out on defense. And then kind of force Jake Fromm to beat you with his arm more so than having DeAndre Swift with big runs and having them beating you that way. But as far as Ian Book, I think he's going to have to be efficient with Fromm. If you're going neck and neck with a quarterback like Fromm who completes 75% of his passes and you're a quarterback that completes only 61%, you're going to have to keep that game at an efficiency level with Jake Fromm. And I think that's what makes Jake Fromm so special. He's not a game manager, in my opinion. I think he can win you games, but he doesn't make any mistakes. He has 5 touchdowns, no interceptions this season. And he's 75% with his passes. And I think if you're Ian Book, you have to be able to be efficient in this game. Get the ball to your wide receivers. And I understand he's been having a lot of pressure on him with that offensive line. I think he got sacked 3 or 4 times in that game against Louisville, and that was a back-and-forth contest, and a lot of people look at that game, and they're like, oh, man, Juwan Pass? You went neck-and-neck in a game with Juwan Pass and a Louisville team that nobody expected to even do that with you? And I think that's going to be the part that separates Ian Book and is just being efficient and getting outside the pocket, because that's what he does best. He does best when he gets outside of the pocket and be able to have some wiggle room, maybe throw it downfield and maybe run the football as well. That's what he's going to have to be if he's going to keep this game close on an offensive end for Notre Dame.
Last year is last year, but I got to believe there's an element to Georgia Because if you recall, they lost to Alabama last year in the SEC championship. And when the playoff dust settled, it was Alabama, it was Clemson, it was Oklahoma, and it was Notre Dame. And Notre Dame showed they did not belong on the same field in the same stadium with a team like Clemson. Georgia got left out of the playoff last year, clearly did not want to play Texas in the Sugar Bowl. They got rolled. I think Georgia, to some extent, and I don't know that Kirby Smart will use this as motivation by going back to last year. He's probably focused on the process right now. But if I'm Kirby Smart, me personally, I'm saying, hey, look, the playoff committee thought Notre Dame was a better team than you last year just simply because they were undefeated and we lost to Alabama. Why don't we just send a little message that we are light years better than the Notre Dame Fighting Irish? That would be a card I'm playing.
No, absolutely. And I agree with you 100%. But I think Georgia's going in with a chip on their shoulder in general, just in this entire season alone. When you had the best team in college football on the ropes, not once but twice, two seasons in a row where you had the best team in college football on the ropes, and then they go off and win a national championship, and then you had them against the ropes in the SEC championship, and then they go off and go to the national championship game, a position that you should have been in. And then you got a team like Notre Dame who – you know, you beat before a couple years ago, and you beat them not in dominating fashion. You beat them. It was 19-20 in that game, but you still beat them. And yet still people think that Notre Dame is a better team because they put them in the college football playoffs and not you. And I think Georgia in general going into this season has to have that mentality of, look, we've proven time in and time out that we can compete with the top-level teams that everybody wants to put in the Final Four of the college football playoffs. But we have to finish games. We have to be able to win these games. Not only just win them in dominating fashion to leave no doubt. That's a Nick Saban quote, leave no doubt. And so I think that's what we have to do every single week. So, yeah, he's definitely going to come in this Notre Dame game, and he's going to want to beat the brakes off of them for the simple fact that this team got in the Final Four only because they don't play a conference championship game. They didn't have to play in Alabama. They didn't have to play in Auburn. They didn't have to play in LSU. They didn't have to do none of that to get to where they got. And so, yeah, he's going to have to come in here with a chip on his shoulder because that's what makes – hungrier teams is when you go in there with a chip on your shoulder rather than go in thinking that this is going to be all smiles and Hallmark cards.
Smiles and Hallmark cards. I like that one. I was thinking puppy dogs and candy canes, but that'll work.
Smiles and Hallmark cards.
Auburn and A&M today is the first game for the doubleheader on CBS. And you talk about two teams that definitely need this game. Auburn's 3-0. Texas A&M already has a loss. They are 2-1. But look at the schedules for both of these teams. So Auburn already played Oregon, got the victory. They go to Texas A&M today. But after today, let's just say Auburn does win this game and go to 4-0. They still have games against number 9 Florida, number 4 LSU, number 3 Georgia, and number 2 Alabama. And then on the flip side, Texas A&M has already played Clemson and lost. They are getting Auburn today at home, and then they still have Bama, Georgia, LSU. I genuinely feel bad for the schedules of both of these teams. It's brutal.
Yeah, especially for if you're Auburn, because you have Florida and LSU on the road. Now, obviously Auburn's been in this situation before to where they had Georgia and then they had Alabama at home, and then we see how that happened and that played out. They end up going to the SEC championship because they beat both of them. And for Texas A&M, I think it's a little bit more – I think, to be honest with you, Nick – I think Auburn has a better chance of finishing with a better record than Texas A&M if they win this game than Texas A&M. I'm just not – and this only because of how good I think this defense is and how talented this defensive front is. And, you know, and I just don't think Texas A&M has that to be able – yeah, they can get past Auburn, and this is a home game, and they can get past them. And, that'll be cool, but the remaining schedule that you just read – with the secondary they have, with Kellen Maude being a quarterback that you don't know what you're going to get depending on what defense you throw at him, then that's a questionable team to me. I think with this defense and seeing that Georgia has their flaws on offense. You know, you can contain that running game with that defensive front, and then you can force Jake Fromm to beat you. I think the LSU team, that's going to be a tough game because, I mean, watching that offense, I don't know. There's not a lot of contain in that offense. But then when you look at Alabama and they haven't been able to run the ball, they've seen time in and time out that if you put pressure on Tua, that Tua, like Mississippi State did last year against Tua, they put pressure on Tua. Tua did not know what to do with the football. And yeah, he's the best, you know, quarterback in college football. But when you put pressure on the best quarterback in college football, eventually they fold eventually in the game too. So, you know, I think Auburn has a better chance of when they, if they win this game, and I do think they could win this game, I think they have a better chance of getting at least four, three, maybe two out of those four games. Maybe two. I will say they can get a game against Florida, and then that one game, that upset game, whether that's going to be Georgia or whether that's going to be Alabama.
Coming up next, it's time for another installment of the Coach's Corner. You're going to hear from Brian Kelly, Dan Mullen, Gus Malzahn, Jimbo Fisher, and Nick Saban. That's next here on a Week 4 edition of Saturday Tailgate on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is Saturday Tailgate Week 4 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nikhail Marquise Munson with you. We'll play another game of In or Out. That is coming up at 10 o'clock this morning. But right now, time for another installment of our Coach's Corner, where we go around the conference and around the country and give you some of the better sound bites from the coaches this past week and react to some of the storylines in college football. First of all, let's start with Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly. Here's the Irish head man talking about his opposing quarterback tonight, Jake Fromm.
He's efficient. He's unflappable. You can pressure him, and he doesn't panic. He makes great decisions. He's sound with the ball. And it generally, look, when you get down to the really great teams, you're going to get Trevor Lawrence. You're going to get, you know, you're going to get the great quarterbacks are going to be the reason why they start to separate. And Fromm is one of those guys that gets you to start to separate.
That was Brian Kelly talking about Jake Fromm. And I think the reality is, look, Jake Fromm's going to be a first-round draft pick next year. I think midway through the season last year, Jake Fromm really shedded the label of game manager. I don't think he's just a guy that keeps Georgia steady, Eddie, don't make mistakes. Yeah, don't let the efficiency fool you for game manager. I mean, he doesn't have a monster arm. He's not an overly mobile quarterback. But let's not disrespect the kid as calling him a game manager. I think he's more than that.
No, absolutely. I think, and a lot of that is, the issue is, and it's the same thing when you look at Alabama's run game and you say, well, you know, I don't think Alabama's run game is that good. And yeah, they take the drop off, but the problem is that you have a quarterback that can throw the ball for 400 yards a game. Why not use him? So it's the same thing with, you know, with Jake Fromm and this running attack of, if you got two running backs, if you got DeAndre Swift, who's out there, you got Zamir White, who's very talented as well, and that's a guy that has, you know, 141 yards this season so far. When you got two guys like that that can run the football behind a great offensive line that you have, why do I need to throw the football downfield and take chances and then force myself into those mistakes? If I don't have to force myself into those mistakes, I'm not going to try to make those mistakes. But I do think that if now, and we've seen in games against Alabama, we've seen in big games to where when they shut down Swift and then when they shut down Holyfield, back when Holyfield was there, Jake Fromm can win you a game. Yeah, they've had some slip-ups in the third and fourth quarter of games, but he's shown time and time again that, hey, if you shut my running game down and you force me to throw the football, I can beat you too.
I think the reality is, too, let's face it, Justin Fields was the number one recruit quarterback a few years ago. Say what you want, the kid is tremendous, but he couldn't take away the job from Jake Fromm. So if Jake Fromm was a game manager, Justin Fields would be the starting quarterback in Georgia. There's a reason why he transferred to Ohio State. I would actually love to get Kirby Smart, either on the record or off the record, because he was in Alabama when A.J. McCarron was there. What are the similarities between Jake Fromm and A.J. McCarron? Because I would say that Jake Fromm has more ability than A.J. McCarron.
I would actually agree with you. I think, and this is no knock at A.J., you know, he had a great career at Alabama, but I just think Jake Fromm, and once again, this is going to be my second reference to the Dogs, and this is no pun intended for him playing for the Bulldogs, but he has dog in him, man, and he has confidence, he has poise, he knows where to put the football, he reads defenses very well, and I think as a quarterback, to be able to read defenses, I think that's a key to your success. So I think that's why we've seen Jake Fromm, his ability to be able to force Georgia in these situations to where if they don't have a good run game, guess what? I can beat you too.
Okay, next up in the coach's corner, the Florida Gator head coach Dan Mullen. He was on the Paul Feinbaum show talking about the rivalry against the Tennessee Volunteers.
You know, Florida-Tennessee game is always a big rivalry game, and always an exciting game and a fun game to be a part of. You know, when you get in this type of rivalry game, it is, you can kind of, like everybody throw the records out, but also, when you watch the team, the Tennessee team, and you look, they have some talent. They have some youth on their team, and and youth sometimes makes a little bit of errors here and there, and when you watch their games and you can see, boy, if they change one or two things, or one or two little mistakes here or there, within the course of the game, they could be 3-0, and the and then it's a little bit different narrative. They have a different attitude coming in, probably here, and it's a different image coming into the game. But so what we can't do is we got to make sure we understand that the talent that's coming in here, on top of it being a rivalry game, and how we have to be ready for that.
Florida head coach Dan Mullen on the rivalry with Tennessee. And to me, you can talk about the youth and the playmakers and this and that. It feels like a coaching mismatch. It feels like Dan Mullen, Todd Grantham, significantly better right now than Pruitt, Ansley, and Jim Chaney. That's why I go Florida today.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you that the coaching staff plays a big part in basically how this game is one-sided, and speaking of one-sided, that's what this rivalry has been. I think Tennessee has beaten Florida once in the last like maybe 10 years. So, and I just think this series, this game is lopsided. But like Dan Mullen says, man, this could be a whole different Tennessee team if they would have beat Georgia State, if they would have been able to beat BYU. And they would have went into this game 3-0 as everybody expected them to do so beginning of the season. And I think you have a different mentality for this team. Now this team's mentality is dig themselves out of a hole. And that's when I think when you have a guy that's like Jeremy – or not like Jeremy Pruitt, but like Dan Mullen, who has that mentality of – look, they're a team that they have a mentality of – they think they're in the ropes. They think they're trying to dig themselves out of a hole. So they're going to try to do things and try things and do different things that they've done in those last three games that they didn't do. And so I have to be prepared for that. And I think that's where you have the separation between Dan Mullen and Jeremy Pruitt is. I don't think Jeremy Pruitt's going to be able to, if Florida throws something at them that they don't expect, I think he just gets caught off guard in this game. So I do see it, but like I said, this Tennessee team has been competitive, so we'll see what happens today. I'm looking forward to seeing it, though.
Since 2005, Florida has defeated Tennessee every year but one. That was 2016 when Tennessee beat Florida 38-28. But you look at some of the margins of victory, 59-20, 30-6, 31-17, 37-20. 31-17, 47-21. I mean, there has been some lopsided victories for the Gators. Now, Tennessee's been competitive in a few of these games the last 15 years, but only one victory since 2005. Don't see that changing today. Moving along, Coach's Corner here on Saturday Tailgate. Let's get to Auburn head coach Gus Malzahn talking about his young quarterback Bo Nix handling Kyle Field.
The fact that we had the first game on the road, now we had more fans than they had, but it was still, an exciting atmosphere, a big game. So he has that in his back pocket as far as experience. Now, what we're going to see here is, we're truly going the road in one of the loudest places probably in our league. So we'll do a good job of the crowd noise, and we've done that really the last 3 weeks, even when we were playing at home. I think it's like anything else. This will be his first experience, but I know that he is he's a great competitor. The moment won't be too big. I've said that before. So we'll just have to handle the noise and everything that goes with it.
And I think when you talk about handling the noise, you can really squelch that crowd two ways. One of which, if A&M gets the ball first, you can simply have your defensive line out there, force a three and out, get after Kellen Mond, bang him around early. And secondly, if Auburn gets the ball, I think it's about establishing Jatavius Whitlow. If you can get Booby Whitlow going and work Bo Nix into the game where he's not overwhelmed, you set yourself up for success.
Yeah, one thing I don't want Dan Mullen or Gus Malzahn to do on offense is see how weak Texas A&M secondary is and think to himself, I think I can test it. And test Bo Nix early. If there's nothing downfield, don't throw it. If there's nothing downfield, don't throw it. Whitlow has been good. He's been consistent this year. He's been healthier this year. So, you know, he's been able to stay on the field. So just run the football, establish some dominance, because obviously they're run defense and they're going to put some pressure on a young quarterback. So being able to run the football can kind of open your passing game a little bit, and that's football fundamentals, ladies and gentlemen. But it's going to be a tough environment to go into. I look at these next five games for Auburn. Four of them are going to be on the road, including this one, and they have one against Mississippi State that's going to be at home. And their last road game in that five-game stretch is against LSU. So this is a big test for them. If you're and trust me, I've been in that stadium at LSU. That is, you think Kyle Field is good, like as far as like a home crowd, that LSU crowd is not anything to play with when you're a freshman quarterback. So this is a good test for them, man. And we're going to see that, you know, because I know a lot of people are buying into Bo Nix, and we're going to see he's going to have a big test this week about, you know, if he can be that quarterback to take Auburn to the next level. And he may not do it this year. You know, let's not put pressure on this kid and expect him to win 10 games this year, and because it may not happen, because that wasn't the expectation even going into this season. So, you know, let this kid win some games, and if they can come out this season winning 8 games, maybe even 9, you know, I think that leads you to the future of what this team can do under Bo Nix.
Okay, coming up next, we'll kick off hour number two with another game of in or out. We'll give you about 7 or 8 different statements, tell you if we're in or out on those around the world of college football. And then our buddy Bill Bender from the Sporting News is going to join us at 10:15. Hour two, Saturday Tailgate, coming up next.